It's 9:30. It's Monday morning, and it's time for Food Talk. I'm Marianne Myers, and I am joined in the KMUN studio.
I'm so excited.
By my ever fabulous co-host, Linda Perkins. Good morning, Linda.
I got my party apron on.
It's very exciting.
That's our champagne noise.
We should have. We could have a mimosa, even though, you know, because it's morning.
Yeah.
It is very exciting to be back in the studio. And I think for me, very, very exciting to be in the same room with you.
I know, it's been so long. And actually, it was way more exciting a couple minutes ago because our plan was, you know, come to the studio, be really COVID safe, we'll have the windows open. And we had the windows open. But for all of you, the seven of you out there in Radio Land, it's a little blustery.
Slightly breezy.
So it turns out that this room is actually about as far across as the drapes are long. And how we found that out was they were absolutely horizontal.
It's crazy, but we still have power.
Yeah, which is exciting.
And we're still in business. And I'm expecting to go home and find the deck chair in the river, I'm pretty sure.
In a random position, just like on the way in here, the crows were all like, wah, through the air, you know, just completely being tossed. And then there'd be like a half a second of calm. And you know how crows are? They're like, yeah. I meant to do that. And then, wah, they get blown the other way.
It must be kind of fun. It's a thrill ride, I'm pretty Woo-hoo. Sure. Hey, it's almost Thanksgiving.
I know, my hands are really soft.
Because
opening all the butter. I've been making cookies ahead of time, you know.
Yeah.
Butter opening.
Oh my gosh. So much to think about. Although, I mean, not for me, but for you. You cook for a lot of people, even if they're not in your home this year or last year.
No, because I like to. Get that? Welcome to volunteer radio. I think I've said this before. If I can make a meal, and then even if I, during the pandemic, have to pack it up and then send it out, it just makes me feel like I've marked the holiday, you know, and celebrated with my family.
Yeah. What's your favorite dressing? Do you make the same stuff? It's not really stuffing anymore, right?
No, but no.
Do you do different ones all the time, or do you?
I do, and I have never hit on one that I totally, exactly, absolutely love, or rather, that I do and everybody else does. And so, you know, that's so funny you said that. This year, I'm going to try Ina Garten's leek and... Is it leek and mushroom bread pudding?
Have
you ever made that?
I have not made it, although I have had a mushroom bread pudding before that was really yummy. So yeah. I bet that that's going to be really good.
And I know her recipe is really famous. And so I think, you know, I make a lot of bread. So I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to make the white rustic bread and then some whole wheat bread and then some buckwheat bread and cube them all up. And I think that that will be pretty. And none of them is strongly flavored enough. Like, I mean, rye is good. And rye is actually good in stuffing.
I think it would be. I have some of your rye at home and I'm going to make some stuffing out of it. I'll let you know.
Yeah. I mean, I know that it's good to have a little bit in there and then occasionally like, ooh, piece of rye. Mm. But I'm not going to do that with this because I want to make it the first time closer to
the real
what
the
she
actual
intended
recipe.
So
are you a bread cutter as opposed to a bread tearer for stuffing?
Yeah, just because, you know, bread tearing is a lot of work when you have a pretty chewy bread.
Yeah,
and just I got some carpal tunnel and I'm like, why make them mad over that? So how about you?
I like it torn, just because I like the crunchy bits.
That rustic look,
and
too.
There's, you know, a lot of craggy, crunchy bits if you tear the bread. But I mostly just, I got to say that dressing is my favorite part generally of any celebratory
Me too.
Meal. And so it's hard to insult me about how you prepare the bread, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But generally I would tear it up.
I know that I like fresh herbs better than dried herbs.
Yes.
And that I use a lot of fresh herbs. I really like mushrooms in it, so I always put mushrooms in it. I always put onions and celery in it, too. I don't put carrot. Too sweet. What do you do?
All of that stuff, plus I often dice up an apple.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Okay. I like an apple in there with the sage, and I mean, because what's dressing without some fresh sage, right?
Yeah.
So I very often put sausage.
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes chestnuts.
No, I never do that.
I love chestnuts, but they're just so stinking much work.
Yeah, they really are.
Yeah.
I made chestnut soup 1 year.
Oh, good Lord. Wow.
I mean, I should still be making it. It took that long, you know.
And that's a chestnut intensive recipe.
Yeah. Oh,
to
yeah.
Pick.
Yeah. No, it took like the better part of a day.
Yeah.
And I didn't really realize it going into it. And so, you know, I just got more and more swearful as time went on. It wasn't really a holiday kind of vibe.
It's an excellent way to keep people out of the kitchen.
It was more like a working overtime vibe.
Oh, my gosh. Well, speaking of mushrooms, mm-hmm. Recently on the Food 52 website, there was a recipe and also a video of a wild mushroom stew. And I'm going to make it maybe tonight. I have a no-recipe recipe for what I think of as a mushroom ragu, which is basically the same thing, but this one just sounds so good and could be an entree. So I'm going to give it a try because there's a whole lot of great mushrooms available right now.
Yeah.
But
I didn't see it.
It's called Herby Mushroom Stew.
Okay.
And it's on the Food 52 website for anybody who's interested in checking it out. But it's got, in addition to, it's like a pound and a half of mushrooms.
Yeah.
So a lot of mushrooms. But in addition to the mirepoix is shallots and carrots.
Okay.
It's got a lot of obviously fresh herbs in it and a little bit of tomato paste and some garlic and some red wine and some soy sauce, smoked paprika, some stock. And I have some mushroom stock at home. Mushroom stock is not appropriate for every single thing that you want stock for, but this sounds like a great way to use it up. It's got some coriander and some balsamic vinegar, and you just let it simmer for an hour.
Would you like serve it over noodles or something? What
yeah,
would you
they
do?
They suggest mashed potatoes or rice, but it sounds like to me it should be over soft polenta, but it would be good over egg noodles too, buttered noodles. Yipes. Be really good. And I like anything that's simmering along and smelling delicious for an hour anymore. I mean, it's that time of year.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, that's so funny that you said that. So I think I was baking yesterday and I looked outside and I was so excited because there was this cloud in the yard, like it was clear for 10 feet. And then there was and then 10 feet up a cloud started and it made me feel special. Oh, I got my own personal cloud. And so then I called Dale in from the shop and he came in and he's like, the windows are steamy. And so it wasn't my own personal cloud and I was no longer special, but my hands were still soft.
And it was your personal cloud. You made it.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. And Dale continues to come in from the shop after
emergency,
all these years.
Emergency personal cloud. Emergency.
Oh my gosh. Oh, well, it is pretty nice. It is pretty nice to have something simmering away on the stove.
Yeah, yeah. So let's see. I was thinking back when you were talking about stuffing, Barbara Glick she has a stuffing that she's famous for, and it's cornbread and Dungeness crab.
Ooh.
Yeah. And she makes a giant, she has a big family. She makes a giant, like lasagna pan of it because they just snarf through it like animals. Sorry.
Oh, cornbread is makes really good stuffing.
Yeah.
I gotta say. That's
have you ever put cornbread in a bread stuffing? Like, have you ever mixed the two?
No, have you?
I don't know. I was thinking of doing it this year, like just doing, those three breads and then maybe some cornbread too and just seeing what happened. I don't know if that's a good idea.
Cornbread is so, it's
absorbent.
It's even more welcoming of liquid than regular bread. But I have made cornbread croutons before, and that might be a good way to incorporate cornbread into a dressing.
And maybe what I should do, I'm so glad you said that, is mix up the liquid into the bread mixture and then mix it into the cornbread and then mix them together so that when I add liquid, the cornbread just doesn't suck it all and turn to, you know.
Yeah.
Mush.
Yeah. Stucco. Yeah. It's kind of
stucco. So delicious. We this year's stuffing.
It's a wall finish.
Well, and I think that I want to find, you know, like a really absolutely delicious stuffing, because I can, you know, make stuffing. It's just you want like the uber stuffing.
Yeah.
Just when all growing up, my dad made just this horrible stuffing every year. There was more organ meat, and it was just some goal of his just to get as much awful in there that he could, you know, just liver and hearts and kidneys. And it was just this, towards the end, man, it was just pate. That's all that it was. And I'm not making that up. And you're just like, you know, it's Thanksgiving and we could be having stuffing.
Oh.
If you put bread in this.
that'd be maybe next year. You know, the other thing about dressing is that you want it the next day and the mm-hmm. next day and or however yeah. long you can make it last. And I like it on a sandwich. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know it's weird to put
with
something
turkey.
Bread
yeah.
inside of a sandwich, mm-hmm. but it's delicious. And I think about that when I mm-hmm. think about what I'm going to put in there. That's one of the reasons I don't make oyster stuffing anymore, because I don't really want it in the sandwich the next day.
Yeah.
I love oysters, yeah. but maybe not so much on a turkey sandwich.
Yeah.
So.
Well, one thing I do Thanksgiving that I'm always thankful that I've done is I make a soup that I plan to add turkey to. So I make a soup, whether it's just a vegetable soup or, you know, like a turkey barley soup without the turkey, or a wild rice creamy soup with mushrooms that I'm going to add turkey to the day after Thanksgiving. And then I stick it in the freezer. And I'm always really happy I have that. And
yeah.
I make enough turkey that I know I'm going to have turkey left for that and for sandwiches, you know. And so, you know, the leftovers are yeah. almost as good and certainly a lot easier than the dinner.
Yes. It's like we're cooking for days.
Yeah.
I mean, we're cooking for days, but then we're eating that for days.
Yeah.
So, very nice. Are you doing pies?
Oh, yeah. How about you?
No way.
Really?
There's only two of us.
Oh, but Thanksgiving and you're like the pie-making queen of the universe.
I'm not anymore. I've retired.
You've retired.
I have retired my pie pan.
Oh, I still remember that gorgeous cranberry custard pie you made.
Oh, that wasn't my recipe, but that was a really good recipe.
Yeah.
I will attempt to find that while we're still on the air, and I will share with everyone where to find that recipe.
Because it was delicious and it was gorgeous. There's a new pie shop on the Long Beach Peninsula, but it's a lady who's been making pies in our area for a very long time. And the thing that I think is so creative that she does is she makes so many different cranberry flavored pies. So she makes the one, my favorite, and I'm pretending that I've tried them all because I tried this one. I'm just like, that's it. But it's just a blackberry cranberry pie.
Oh.
But it's absolutely delicious. So the main ingredient is probably blackberry, but the cranberries just add so much. And I'm sure she cooks the cranberries ahead, because cranberries have to be cooked. I think I just wouldn't try putting them raw in a pie and expecting the cranberries to be cooked in the middle, you know?
Right.
But
right.
it's just delicious. It makes it such a fall, you know, Thanksgiving, Christmas thing. It's really, really a delicious filling. I'm real happy to see that she has her own standalone store now, and she has a giant oven. She's like that for her after cooking out of the home for so many years is just such a great thing, just to be able to pop 20 of something
so
in the oven
great.
And go like, neener,
yeah,
neener,
yeah,
neener,
yeah.
I'm done.
Yeah, definitely. I'm not finding this recipe right away, but what I will tell you, if you're interested in this, it's a cranberry tart, and it is, you can find it on the Epicurious website. If you go to the Epicurious, just go to epicurious.com and search for cranberry tart. I know that there are other adjectives attached to the
was
title.
Was it cranberry custard?
No, it wasn't.
Okay,
it wasn't a custard. I'm not sure if it was it wasn't a chiffon. Anyway, if you just search the Epicurious site for cranberry tart, you're going to find it, and it is unbelievably delicious.
Yeah.
So, and really a great way to use, because we have access right now in our world to fresh cranberries.
Yeah.
It's very exciting.
I remember the people at Salvation Alley.
Starvation Alley. And, there is salvation in cranberries, so yeah. Yes.
They were telling me that they have actually three different varieties of cranberries. And yes. I wish... At some point, I think cranberries will, you know, people will label the varieties and you can, you know, try them and see the difference. I would be excited to see something like that, but I've never seen them, you know, labeled that way at a market or anything.
They often come labeled that way at the Thursday market through the food web.
Really? I've never seen the different varieties.
And they are coming marketed. From, not from Starvation Alley, they are coming from... Oh, another local cranberry grower, and I'm sorry I can't think of their name off the top of my head. I do want to take a quick second and remind everybody that Food Talk is a co-production of KMUN and North Coast Food Web. I encourage all of you to go to both of those websites. They are both .orgs, KMUN.org, NorthCoastFoodWeb.org, and find out what's shaking out there in the radio verse and also in the food verse in our neck of the woods. So,
yay.
Yeah.
I've been experimenting with spices. So
you sent me an interesting article.
Oh yeah, that's so funny that that happened right after I was experimenting with spices, because it's an article about spices. But what I've been doing is seeing what happens when I increase the spices in my recipes, whether they're baking or savory. So what I do, or what I my experiment is, I just take my recipe and then I increase the spices again by half. So if it's just half a teaspoon, I put in 3/4 teaspoon. Uh-huh. And I haven't been doing that with the cayenne pepper, because I really don't want things to be hotter, but just trying with flavor. And I've had some interesting results, like my chili tastes better.
Really?
Yeah. And
so you're increasing the chili powder.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. But I don't use a real spicy chili powder. I use a salt-free one.
Okay.
That's not real spicy. And then the only thing, you know, cookies are better. There's a little more flavor to them. But the only thing that I didn't like was apple pie. Just the apple pie spices, increasing them by 1.5 times, I was surprised, but it was just a little heavy-handed. Uh-huh. You know how, like, when you get too many dried spices in something, it's kind of chalky weird, you know?
Yeah, it is. It's musty.
Yeah, that's a good word. I always just call it heavy-handed, because that's just... Anyway, but that was the only thing. It was too much. That's the only thing so far that's been too much. But then, of course, I'm experimenting, and of course, with adding more spices. And then there's this article in Consumer Reports about how so many spices, a third of the spices, the dried spices and herbs that they tested, have heavy metals in them.
Yes.
And I'm just like, what the heck?
You know? Oh, I know. You sent me that article, and I was like, it really is always something.
Exactly. Exactly.
Holy cow. Wow. And then I was sharing that with my husband, Tom, the information in that article, and going, you know, I mean, I can't grow everything. No. Like, I don't know where I would grow cinnamon, frankly, in a pot in the bedroom.
Honey,
I don't even know.
Can you go peel some bark? Yeah, right. I want to make some cookies.
So that is just daunting. And then I decided for my own peace of mind, because I have to set that aside and continue to use spices.
I know,
I just was, you know, I decided that this is what I do for almost anything that's potentially damaging to my health. Is if I cannot do anything about I just consider that I am building antibodies.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
I don't know that will help with heavy metals.
Yeah. But I sent an email to a spice company that, you know, seems to have a brain, Burlap and Barrel.
Oh, yeah.
And they sent me one right back, and they said the way that we understand it is that the things that are most likely to have heavy metals are things that are grown in the ground, and that you dry them with the peeling on. And so she said, for us, that's ginger and turmeric.
Okay.
And so when that article was talking about kids that get lead poisoning from spices, isn't that just unimaginable? But usually it's turmeric, because people who take it for health qualities, use it in such great quantity.
Yes.
And so that was interesting. But when the Consumer Reports did the study, what they said was, of course, ginger and turmeric had a lot, but thyme and basil and oregano dried had a lot. I never use dried basil. I just don't think it has flavor.
No, it's worthless.
Yeah, and so I use that fresh, and I've got so much oregano and so much thyme growing, I always use that fresh.
Yeah.
But the other thing was paprika, and I guess it makes sense. It's peppers. They have skin. I don't know, but I'm going to keep using that. But
we have, you know, local paprika.
Well, that's the thing, though. That's what Consumer Reports said. It didn't matter where it was grown in the U.S. or grown foreignly. It didn't matter if it was organic or not, because it's the dirt.
Yeah.
And so, but anyway, I've been fine so far.
Yeah, right. So, so, oh, my gosh.
So I'm just going to keep using spices.
Well, but if I end up getting hit by a bus, I'm going. The last thing I'm going to think is I should have eaten more spices. Yes. They weren't going to hurt me, really.
Linda said to increase them.
Oh, my gosh. Well, it really is always something. But you cannot cook good food without Mm-mm. herbs and spices. Yes. It's not possible.
Yeah.
It's not possible. And salt, which comes from the sea and
God.
The caves.
Comes from God.
Yes, I know. Yes. Well, there's an argument to be made about, you know, everything coming from God and all of that. But still, salt comes from mines sometimes, too. It's not all sea salt.
Okay.
So what are you going to do? You cannot do without salt. You can't.
Yeah, no, huh? Well, no, I mean, you have to have it to live.
Yeah.
That's what I tell myself every time. I'm like, tick, 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 onto the dinner.
more salt.
Tick, 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 tick. I'm alive.
Oh, my gosh. It makes me want a French fry, frankly, just talking about it. Have you ever made oven fries that you're really happy with? Have you ever made oven fries?
No. The only oven potatoes I'm happy with are those Emily's English potatoes from Ina Garten's site.
Yes.
And
my gosh.
Yeah, they're so good. They're a lot of work, but they're so good.
They're a lot of work.
Oh, but they're so good. Yeah. I mean, you make a thing of those and you make hamburgers and your family's happy.
Yeah.
How did you do this to the mere hamburger?
Yeah.
So good. Yeah. But how about you? Do you have oven fries you like?
I have made them a lot of times in cooking classes.
Okay.
You know, it's one of the things, especially when you're doing cooking classes for kids.
Yeah, they want to know.
Yeah. And so, I've made sweet potato fries in mm-hmm. the oven that were really quite good. And I think it's because the sugar quality allows them to get a little crispy on the outside. But no, I don't think they're worth anything. I think you need to fry a potato in deep fat to get a good
In those Emily's potatoes, I mean, the recipe does have a, you know, take half a cup of oil. I mean, really, it is half a cup. So, and most of it comes off, but yeah, they're essentially fried, even though they're in the oven.
Oh, yeah, they're delicious.
Yeah.
But geez, I made them once.
Whee!
Yeah.
Hey, Doris Greenspan is a baker. She has a new cookbook.
Yeah.
And she has an interesting thing she's doing in it. She's making her cookies in a muffin tin.
Really?
Yeah. So they're kind of halfway between a blondie and a cookie.
Uh-huh.
But what she says is they're all exactly the same shape. So for gift giving, they all look really perfect. And the other thing is you get crispy edges, which I always think
nice.
Is good.
Yes.
And then the third thing is they make really, really good cookies for ice cream sandwiches.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. If you just want to think about next summer, 9 months away.
Well, they can be in the freezer.
Yeah.
They can be waiting for the next warm day. Well, I wonder if there are certain kinds of, what kinds of cookies is she making, I wonder?
Well, that's it. I think like chocolate chip type cookies, you know, and oatmeal, raisin.
The standards.
Cookies. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But you know how when you're making ice cream sandwiches, you know, the cookies always break because the ice cream's really hard and you're trying to force it to squish and, you know, the cookie is the one that loses. And so I think it's a good idea.
Yeah, it's a great idea.
I might try it when I get a free second.
Well, that's going to be like 90 days from now.
Probably after Christmas.
Uh-huh. Now, we're at that time of year where everything is followed. All our plans are followed by the phrase, after the holidays.
Yes. You are so right.
Yipes. I know. It is slightly less complicated this year than it was last year, but not a lot less complicated.
Well, yeah, because the pandemic, it was really our first holiday you know, because 4th of July, everybody could be outside.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's still a little more work. Everything's a little more work.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
oh, especially with, we haven't had water out in my area.
Oh,
my
gosh.
By the fairgrounds. Yeah. And so we've got a 3-day boil order that we have to do. And the thing that's hardest about that, you know, after the storm of 2007, I'm not really a prepper, but more of a hoarder. I have a lot of bottled water anyway, so we're fine for that. But the thing that's so hard, especially I bake for a living, and so, you know, there's a lot of dishes, is doing dishes, because you have to boil all the water. And you
oh,
know,
man.
Dale's like, oh, it'll be fine. And I'm like, well, you know, I'm just not gonna do my dishes in fecal matter, because who knows what it is, you know? We talked about that earlier. So no, I do have to boil the water, but it takes literally, because I've timed it, a load of dishes takes 5 times longer than it will in 2 days, you know, once the boil order is lifted. And so I'm pretty excited for that boil order to be lifted.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
That's crazy. And that was not a weather-related event, I don't think. It was a broken main or
yeah,
something?
Yeah, well, what I assume is that the weather, the rain, got the water so soggy that it shifted, and then
oh.
one part of the hill, you know, went and the other part didn't. And so
yeah.
That's what I assume happened, but that's just totally speculation on my part. But
we need a disclaimer.
Yeah, but we didn't have water. I mean, nothing came out of our pipes for a day and a half.
Oh, my gosh.
And so that was also challenging.
Yeah, that's tough for cook.
Yeah. Definitely.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I've been lucky about that, because it's very specific areas of our world.
Yeah, I'm kind of taking it personal.
Yeah. Well, you should. I think you should. Well, we're coming close to the top of the 10 o'clock hour, and I want to make sure that we get in any last minute thoughts on holiday cooking before we leave everybody.
You can put some roasted garlic in your mashed potatoes. That's pretty dang
Ooh,
good.
And yep. You know, lately I have been, if I haven't had roasted garlic, I've been buying multiple kinds of, there's a local grower that grows like 10 different kinds
oh,
of
yeah,
garlic.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I buy them all, and mm-hmm. then I dump them all in my basket for
yeah.
things like potatoes and onions, and then I don't know what they are, but
yeah.
I just...
And they're so different from one another.
They're fabulous.
Yeah.
And I roast them all.
Okay.
And so that's great. But if I don't have roast garlic, I've just been dropping a couple of whole raw garlic cloves in water when I boil potatoes for mashed potatoes.
Okay. That's
and
a good idea.
Then they're done when the potatoes are done, and when you mash the potatoes, the, you know...
That's a really good idea.
It's
I never
easy.
Thought of that.
It's easy peasy.
Right on.
Well, and mashed potatoes are a thing, you know. I mean, you have to have them. It's like
yeah.
It's like stuffing.
Yeah. The first time I ever made or I ever bought a garlic at a farmer's market was probably 25 years ago, but or 15 years ago, but I didn't pay attention, and I made aioli out of it, and I just about killed Dale.
Oh my God.
It was like so strong and so pungent, and he was such a trooper, because we weren't even married at that point. He's like, this is delicious.
It's true love. He still wanted to marry you. Of course he did. Hey, Linda, we have to say goodbye, but I can't tell you how excited I am that we're back in the studio together.
I know. I tried so hard not to talk over to you, because I could see when you were fixing to talk.
Okay. We're done. Bye.
Bye.